the rustling has gone down. Can it be that students are more interested in criminal cases than in labor management conflicts?
Yeah, it could be.
Mr. Elby, please.
Please report, Judge Eastbrook, Judge King, Judge Sykes. My name is Bruce Elke. I am here today on behalf of the Office of Professional Employees International Union, Local 95. What's at issue here is a provision of the collective bargaining agreement between that local union and the Wood County Telephone Company. In particular, Article Roman numeral 20, Section 2001, which concerns it's at the end of the contract, it defines the term of the contract and the relationship of that contract term to the bargaining of modifications to a successor agreement. That's the provision that's in dispute here. The court below granted a summary judgment against the local union in favor of the company. And frankly, our concern here today is this. That summary judgment motion could not have been granted against the local union unless the court below had determined that the reading of the contract term in question by the local union was totally unreasonable. Our reading of the contract term in question is that, and it concerns the notice of termination and what happens at that point, it says if a notice of termination is given, then the contract continues in effect. It says that if the termination notice is given, bargaining is to commence within 30 days of that notice being given. That's what the contract says. If no termination is given, then the contract is silent in terms of when the bargaining has to commence. The parties are not under the gun in that situation.
When July 6th, 2003 came up, which was the end of this five-year or four-year term, when that came, could the union have gone out on strike?
As we read the contract, no. Because the question is, how do you read this contract? We read the contract to be what is called an evergreen provision, which means that absent a notice of termination, the contract automatically continues in place. The parties are free to bargain regarding modifications in the terms of the provisions of the contract while the existing terms and conditions continue in force and effect. The Wood County Telephone Company,
And one of those existing terms is a no strike, no lockout clause, right?
Right.
Okay. So you have the benefit of consistency in your position.
Yes.
If I understand the company's position is that in the light of this notice, they could have locked your members out on July 6th, or you could have gone out on strike. I'm going to wonder, well, I have to ask your adversary, whether that's really the position the company wants for the long run, that deals like this would leave them exposed to strikes.
The problem with this case, and I think what makes it complicated, is that we know what the bargaining history was. We know what the actions of the parties have been. We know what the contract terms are. And it was only after we got into the period of time where these notice had been given by the local union that they were interested in bargaining modifications. It was only after that the Wood County Telephone Company said, by giving the notice of an interest, of a desire to modify the terms of the contract, you automatically terminated the contract. And so now the question is that really what the language of Article 20, Section 2001 says, or?
Right, but you see the reason, and of course your adversary, I hope, because I'll pursue this with him. As I understand the union's position, it leaves room for renegotiation while the parties remain bound by such things as no strike, no lockout clauses, as well as arbitration.
Absolutely.
The company's position seems to be that it is impossible to renegotiate without also creating the prospect of an immediate strike?
No. Our view of this contract is we're bound by the terms of the contract.
Right. If it's evergreen, if it just continues through the negotiation, that's true. But, of course, what the district court held was that it didn't continue through the negotiation.
Right. And the question is
trying to pursue the implications of this for things other than arbitration. Because
you're absolutely right.
Have other implications.
You're absolutely correct. There are other implications, and one might suspect that if this grievance had not come up that gave rise to this litigation, if the discharge grievance,
my suspicion is that if the union had gone out on strike, the employer would be here taking the diametrically opposite position that it was an illegal strike.
I would suspect the same. And if that's what we've got here, judges, is this. I would submit that the union's reading of this contract is reasonable. If you don't even have to look at
the bargaining. You began your argument that way, but it puzzles me. Why does it matter whether it's reasonable? I would think the question is whether it's right.
We have argued in all of our briefs that our reading of the contract, that the contract is clear, that it's not ambiguous, and that our reading of the contract is correct. And we've argued that, I think, reasonably well, and it's there for you to read in the briefs. But what I'm here to say today, I've only got a few minutes, what I'm here to say today is, look, worst case scenario, both our argument is certainly reasonable. We think it's compelling, our reading of the contract. Their argument, I'll concede for the purpose of today's argument, is, okay, it's also reasonable. Then what do we have? What we have then is we have two reasonable readings of the contract, and when you have two reasonable readings of the contract and they differ, you have an ambiguous contract. When you have an ambiguous contract, you look at the bargaining history and the actions of the party, and if you do that, the bargaining history clearly indicates that when the concept of the evergreen clause was proposed, it was intended, what was being proposed was a contract that would continue while bargaining took place. And that in response to that, the employer's representative produced the language that's in the contract today. They were responding to the proposed evergreen concept.
Mr. Elke, what are we to make of the language in your client's notice letter? And that letter was stated within that 60-day, as I understand it, time frame prior to the expiration date of the contract, or within a day or two of that, and invoked specifically this section of the contract which only calls for termination. But it doesn't provide for anything else.
Mr. Pankratz is a former school teacher, and I don't know him, but what he did there was he quoted effectively, in fact, he quotes from the contract. He quotes the terms of the contract that talk about continuing, in effect, that the termination notice has to be given. He didn't give a termination notice. Other than quoting the language of the contract, he doesn't say we want to terminate the contract. He says the operative sentence, Judge Sykes, is the last sentence, or next to the last sentence in the letter where he says, we want to bargain with you about changes. That's the operative sentence. He doesn't say we want to terminate the contract. He quotes the contract language, and then he says, let's bargain. And our argument is that that is not a notice of termination. Our opponent's argument is, by giving even that notice, that operated as a termination to automatically terminate the contract. And we're saying no. And I would point this out to you also. They rely on the last two sentences of that same provision, which talk about if the termination notice is given, then the bargaining has to commence within 30 days. Our reading of that is, all that says is, look, if in fact the termination has been given, where the contract is going to expire, then by contract, the parties are agreeing, we better get our fannies in gear here and negotiate a new contract, the modifications, pretty quickly. And we better start doing that within 30 days. That's what that sentence says, as we'll read it. The other thing that they rely on is the next sentence, which says that the party's intention is to try to have the new terms, the modifications that have been bargained in place by the end of the existing term of the contract. Neither of those provisions requires or says that giving the notice of an interest in bargaining terminates the contract.
If assuming it's the evergreen situation, you're past the termination date of the contract, how would you indicate that you're interested in bargaining without indicating you want to terminate the contract?
Well, in labor relations, as you the contracts, we talk about terminating contracts, we talk about predecessor agreements, we talk about successor agreements. The reality is these contracts go on and on and on. And what happens is when they come to the end of their term, modifications are negotiated. That's the normal process. These are effectively, I would argue, continuing contracts, subject to being the modifications being bargained as provided for by the language of the contract. Or if there's no language in the contract, then we look to general labor law, which tells us that there is an obligation, in fact, to bargain. The way the law is developed, it tells us that that obligation arises when you reach the point where the term of a contract is coming up. There is an obligation to bargain. You look to the general labor law, or you look to the specific language of the contract to tell you, you know, what your bargaining obligation is here.
If these are continuing contracts, what's the import of the expiration date, and why did you feel it was necessary to negotiate for an evergreen clause?
Okay, now we're talking about the bargaining history. And the predecessor agreement to the one that's in question here had provided that what would happen is the union would give notice of an interest in bargaining modifications. At that point, they would begin their bargaining. When they got to the term of the end of the previously agreed upon term of that contract, the contract would automatically terminate. And they would proceed with their negotiations in the situation that Judge Easterbrook has identified, where there was a potential for all, you know, strike, lockout, these problems. And what the evergreen clause was designed to do was avoid that problem by providing that instead of an automatic termination, there would be effectively an automatic continuation absent the notice of termination. And that would permit the parties to engage in the bargaining that we've talked about without being under the gun of potential lockouts and strikes and the ramifications and implications of that kind of conduct. Is that my red light?
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Is that 10 minutes or 5 minutes? I use my 10 minutes?
Right.
Okay.
You now have no minutes. Mr. Walker.
I approve the court. My name is Jack Walker, and with Michael Gallagher, I appear on behalf of Wood County Telephone Company. Things change. I'm from Chicago. I moved to Madison, and I watch my children and grandchildren grow up as Packer fans. I don't ask about their politics in Madison. And things change in this case, particularly on the part of the appellate. When we started the argument made to Judge...
Clearly you see the need in making this argument to have favorable things to say about both the Bears and the Colts.
And I do. I do. Whatever they should be, I hope you'll deem them as having been said. But things do change with this appellant's argument. First they said, well, it has to be an express notice. Judge Shabazz pointed out that it doesn't. Then they said, well, you should read that word express into the other sentence, too. Even though they had earlier argued, well, you should read it literally. Then they said when they got to this court, those weren't working, so they said, well, it's ambiguous. even though they had told the district court that it wasn't ambiguous. They told the district court that it wasn't ambiguous. Today, Mr. Elke has got a new one. He says the summary judgment could not have been granted against his client unless the court decided that his position was totally unreasonable, a new position I never heard of before. I don't think that's what Judge Shabazz did. All you have to do is to read the termination clause.
Well, that of course, is the problem. I mean, you seem to be reading the termination clause so that a request to renegotiate, a request to engage in more negotiations, is the same thing as a request to terminate. And one would ordinarily think just as a practical matter, not only of language, but of business, that there is this intermediate case where you're renegotiating without terminating. Why should we read this clause to foreclose that possibility?
Well, a number of reasons. One is that the contract does not provide for such a scheme. It doesn't say that. It says, as Judge Sykes observed, if you get any notice, you have terminated any notice under Section 2001, and this one said it was, you have terminated the agreement, and it triggers the duty to bargain. There's another argument.
Well, what it says is if it says may give notice, unfortunately it then doesn't give an object in that clause, then the next sentence is if no such notice of termination is given, this agreement shall, etc., shall continue. All right, so if I really understand your position, you're saying any kind of notice is a notice to terminate, even though this clause refers to a notice of termination, which implies that there are other kinds of notices. Notice of intent to watch The Simpsons tonight.
Of intent. Let me address those, if I may. It's true, there is no provision for any other kind of notice. There could have been, but there isn't. So it's under Section 2001, and that's what it says. I say that is a notice, and it terminates it. Mr. Elke makes a couple of arguments. He says, well, they wrote a letter saying they wanted to make changes. In the district court, or maybe in the briefs to this court, he argued about the meaning of the word reopen. Now he's abandoned that. They didn't say they wanted to ask for modification. He uses that.
That was my reason for my question. And how to suppose that you have this evergreen contract, and at some point after the termination of the normal termination, it's continuing on, how do you get involved in modification of the existing contract?
There is no provision that would continue in effect until you gave one of those later notices. You can do it later under this contract. If you want to let it go by, you can let it go by forever. You can let it go by for 6 months. And it says if you then want to do this, give a notice late. That's exactly right. And that, I think, is consistent with our view. There's another thing, Mr. Elke,
I take it that what follows from your view is that you would have had no complaint if the union had walked out on the 6th of July.
Absolutely not. Well, I would have had a complaint, but I wouldn't have a complaint of breach of contract. I might have had a complaint. I absolutely categorically deny that if there was a...
Are there any respects in which the company, as of the 6th of July, changed the terms and conditions of employment?
No, but
the company seemed to be doing quite a lot of things, like withholding union dues under a check-off agreement and paying union stewards that are permissible only while a contract is in force.
I'm hoping you've asked two questions, and I've forgotten the first, so I better go on to the second. As to the time off, it would have been illegal to change that. As to the check-off, it's not illegal to do with...
Well, this circuit and the NLRB have said quite the contrary.
As to the check-off, arguably the circuit said one thing different from the NLRB. There are things that the employer might have wanted to do after the termination date, in addition to a lockout. It might have wanted to implement its proposal after impasse. That's the reason the union wants the evergreen clause. It's not just... If they were afraid of strikes, that's easy. They just don't strike. They don't really need to be afraid of blackouts because that's kind of crazy. What they need to be afraid of is if your employer says, well, we're at an impasse, we're going to implement. For example, in this case, the employer was proposing to increase the employee's...
Everybody agrees that that could be done, right? You just have to follow notice and the delay period.
Could have done it on 61.
Once July 6th arrives, the employer could give its notice, wait the specified time and then implement its last proposal.
Could have done that, but we'd have to wait another 60 days in addition to our legal duty. There's another thing I want to point out. Section 8D says that it's not a mandatory subject of bargaining to insist on a proposal for a change during the term of a contract before the date the contract is reopened. It says that in Section 8D. And if this contract remained in effect date, then the question of retroactivity was not a mandatory subject of bargaining. And yet both parties concede that everything we were bargaining about was a mandatory subject of bargaining. Mr. Elke did not talk about it, and I guess he won't be since he doesn't have any rebuttal left, but he goes on at length about the claim that the company represented the meaning of the language. But even if there was any kind of such a representation, that has no bearing on the letter that was in fact written. The letter that was in fact written says, I want to reopen. Reopen to me means end. It doesn't mean modify, as this word modifies in some of the Sixth Circuit cases. It means it's going to be open. That means it's not going to be closed. If it's going to be reopened, that means it was once open before.
There are a lot of labor collective bargaining agreements that might say be for 4 years with a privilege to reopen after two. And I've always understood that as the waiver by the parties of their right to resist bargaining in mid-term. But if you're right, doesn't that mean when the notice is given that the contract terminates?
Yes, it does. Absolutely, it terminates. This is not a reopening clause.
What would be your best authority for the proposition that if you've got a four-year term contract with an agreement that either side can ask for reopening after two, that request terminates the contract after two?
I'd have to be your best authority for the contract. I don't have a case that says that. It would depend on the language of the contract. There could be a clause that says you can reopen it for this, and that. This isn't one of those clauses. It is not a reopener for a particular purpose. There are no more questions, I thank you.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much. Thanks to both counsel in this case. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will be in recess.